Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast, a conversation about Kenpo and whatever else happens to come our way. I'm Reggie Darden, and today I have with me Joe Ribello, one and only Kenpo Joe. I'm real excited to have a little chat with Mr. Ribello, and we will just have ourselves a good time today. But just to kind of give a little quick background on my story. I started Kenpo in the mid-90s, which was essentially a Tracy's school. Did that for a few years. Almost made it to my third Brown, but then I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did a little bit of Taekwondo, a little bit of Hapkido, a little bit of boxing. After getting out of the military, I then got involved in Capoeira, and I've been doing that for quite a number of years. Then I refound my love for Kenpo, and I'm now training at an American, Ed Parker focused version of Kenpo, and just enjoying that, and just recently earned my green belt there. So we're just moving right along. And actually, as of this recording last night, I got my first technique, dominating circles. So I'm excited about that. So so I have our Kenpo Joe with me today, and just want to go ahead and just hear your story of, you know, how you got involved in Kenpo and where it all started for you. And we'll just go from there.
Sounds like a plan.
So how did you get started in Kenpo or just martial arts in general? And, where did it all start for you?
Well, martial arts in general started me when I was 7 years old. My father and I were doing father-son horseplay, and my dad hit me with a karate chop and dropped me. And instead of crying, I looked up at him and said, "What was that?" He goes, "That's karate." I'm like, "What's karate?" So he started to explain to me he had been working with a gentleman, Dave Schuster, who in New Bedford, who ran a studio called the House of Oyama, where he taught Kyokushinkai, the system founded by Masayama, Matsutsu Oyama. And at the time, again, they didn't teach children. They didn't teach women. Hmm. You know, it was a men's only club kind of thing. Masayama was known in karate world for having killed bulls with his bare hands.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And my father would teach me little basics about karate and Kyokushin, and never received any formal rank from it. But in the mid-1970s, I had a friend of mine's, Eric Chevalier, when I was going to St. Anthony's Middle School. And again, he was studying at the local United Studios of Self-Defense, which was founded by Fred Villari. And he was talking about the classes and whatnot, and I had studied karate before, as I mentioned. So I got in touch with the head instructor. They were running a summer schedule that year, 3 months of instruction for the summer, and you got a free uniform, a free patch, and a free bag. And the picture had this instructor doing this really above head height sidekick. So I started with them. The instructor there was Fred E. Hosmer, who we normally refer to as Ed. And ironically, like Mr. Parker in his early days, you know, it was Ed, you know. So the system was based on a system called Kata Zenpo Goshin Jutsu, which was formulated in America by a gentleman by the name of Victor Sonny Gascon. His real first name was Hilaron. He didn't like using it because children were cruel and they would say, "Oh, he was hilarious."
Yeah. Good.
Victor also, Cedro Gascon also suffered from a speech impediment. So he stuttered occasionally. And but from there, when he was teaching in California, he met up with a gentleman by the name of George Passari, who was in the Air Force at that time. And George trained with Cedro Gascon. And then returned back to his home state, Rhode Island, Providence, and he started to teach the art that he learned in New England. He, in turn, had a student who was a auto mechanic from Boston whose name was Nick Serio. And Nick eventually got his black belt from George and then continued perpetuating Kenpo in the New England area. He, in turn, taught a young man by the name of Frederick J. Villari and another gentleman, Rudy Horn. And they both studied with Nick Serio. And Nick, at one point, moved to Florida. And then Fred Villari decided to open up a couple of studios in Waltham and Dedham in Massachusetts, respectively. He then started his own chain of schools called United Studios of Self-Defense. Many years later, he would switch the name to Fred Villari Studios, and one of his black belts, a gentleman by the name of Charlie Matera, would then take the name of United Studios and start a chain of schools on the West Coast under United Studios. But I was in the early days, in the 1970s, when Fred Villari just started his franchise. So I did that for a while, did that up to the rank of blue belt, and then my direct instructor, Ed Hosmer, left that particular studio. And I had worked with a couple of other instructors at that studio afterwards, but it just wasn't the same. I then went on to train in several different martial arts. In my lifespan, Reggie, I've studied over 60 martial arts in my life. I have a 162 IQ and a photo identic memory. Simply stated, I'm not your average Joe. I then went on to study several different martial arts. I studied with the Wu-Tang group. I'm a member of the real Wu-Tang clan. Wu-Tang, I studied at Northern Praying Mantis.
So Wu-Tang forever.
Wu-Tang forever. Yeah, a lot of people don't even realize what Wu-Tang means, man. You know what it means? It means martial altar. That's the Taoist philosophy of Kung Fu. And studied three different systems of Praying Mantis, Six Harmony, Seven Star, and Eight Step. Also studied Tai Chi, Chen's, Wu's, and Yang style Tai Chi Chuan. Also Baji, the Eight Ultimate System, and as well as other select systems like the Mizung, Lost Track style, Piqua, the Axe Hand system, all under the Wu-Tang banner. But so I was studying different martial arts. I also was involved with Taekwondo and another system, Tai Chuan Dao, under a gentleman by the name of John Gabriel. And I first met him at a European health spa. And he was a person who worked on the B-52 radar systems for the B-52 and got involved with Taekwondo. And Tai Chuan Dao was the Taiwanese pronunciation of Taekwondo, but it was an amalgamation of that and eight Kung Fu systems. So I was studying Taekwondo at the time as well. I also studied Aikiken and Aikijo, the weapon arts of Aikido, and the sensei Jack Leonardo. And as I was learning these different arts, my assistant instructor from the Fairhaven studio, a gentleman by the name of James Gagnon, we happened to meet each other on the street. And he said, do you ever get your black belt? I said, no, I only got the blue belt. And then, Ed left and I left and, I worked a little bit with a couple other gentlemen from that studio, a gentleman, Mark Hippolito, another gentleman, Steve Peeler, but never got beyond blue. He says, well, how come you never got your black belt? I said, never had a place where I could train. He goes, well, you do now. If you're interested, I'm teaching out of my home. Yeah. So I started training in his basement. Again, that was the Kata Zenpo, New England Kenpo based system. I had also met a gentleman who was doing a hybrid system of Kung Fu. The two gentlemen, Chris Vieira and Leo Lassert. And unfortunately, the other instructor left and Leo was kind of, we would work out occasionally, but it was a real hybrid system, But anyway, I was talking to him about meeting with Jim Gagnon. I said, look, you should, and he didn't have a very high opinion of Kenpo at that point. But I introduced them to each other. They were both Vietnam veterans. They were both in Vietnam around the same time. And they got along famously. Leo decided that he wanted to join me in learning Kenpo. Now, Gagnon also had another gentleman, Ron Valier, who he was also teaching at that time. Long story short, we eventually tested for our black belt together, all three of us, in 1983. In January, matter of fact, of 1983, I had gotten my black belt. And then a very interesting thing occurred. Mr. Lassert, he was like me. He was very much a martial arts historian. He would collect martial arts magazines and books and everything. He decided to contact Ed Parker. Now, at the time, we didn't realize that the system, the Kempo that Mr. Parker was teaching, was completely different. We didn't know that. So he got in touch with Mr. Parker. Mr. Parker responded and sent him a letter and letting him know that he had received his letter. And one day we're in Leo's basement training, and his sainted mother, Aurora, opens the door at the top of the stairs leading to the basement. And she goes, "Leo, Ed Parker's on the phone for you." And it's like you basically just told us that Jesus Christ called us on the phone, like the Warner Brothers cartoons with Wile E. Coyote, the smoke trail running up the stairs. So Leo's talking on the phone to Mr. Parker, and I'm hanging on every word as he's talking to him. And we were able, at that time, Mr. Parker had been contacted by Tony and Doreen Cogliandro, Professor Nick Sirio, a gentleman, Kali Griffin from Springfield, Massachusetts, regarding joining, or in Nick Sirio's case, rejoining the IKKA, the International Kempo Karate Association. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get in on the ground floor of Mr. Parker coming back to New England and starting to teach various seminars and events. At the time, I was teaching at a racquetball club where I worked at Nautilus Center and a Fawns Corner Racquetball Club in North Dartmouth, Massachusetts. The owners of the club were taking classes with me, and it was still Kata Zenpo. We hadn't switched over to Ed Parker's Kempo completely yet. Mm-hmm. But they were having a field day. They loved it. And they looked at me and they were like, "Joe, how come you never opened a commercial school?" I said, "Well, I never had the capital." They went, "You do now." Mm-hmm. And they backed me to open a commercial school in 1985. Now, I had started to go to Mr. Parker's seminars whenever he came to New England. I would follow him along like a groupie, and I'd take every class. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Look, if you have any questions, you know, take notes so you can ask me about." And I was like, true to his word, true to his advice, I take notes every time I took a seminar. And we tried at the time to start up the first Ed Parker franchise in New England. And unfortunately, the people who had contacted Mr. Parker initially, Tony Cogliandro, et cetera, they weren't too happy about us wanting to kind of bypass them. And it wasn't intentional. We didn't try to buy. Mm-hmm. We wasn't intentionally trying to bypass them. Just simply at that time, we were all on the same boat, meaning that none of us had learned Ed Parker's Kempo before.
Gotcha.
So, you know, with all due respect to them, what could they teach us? They didn't know Ed Parker's Kempo. They were in the same boat as we were. So, I'll never forget, Mr. Cogliandro was so upset. He wouldn't even let us in his school to talk to Mr. Parker. We had to have a meeting outside in the parking lot in the owner's Cadillac. And at the time, Reggie, in order for us to do the lion's share of the work, it was $25,000 for an Ed Parker franchise. Hmm. Now, if you wanted Mr. Parker to do all the work, he would come down to your area and he would spend 6 months going over everything with you all the way to opening day. That was $125,000. Now, you know, the owners decided not to go with the franchise, but Mr. Parker never forgot how badly I wanted to work with him. So after that point, we had opened a commercial school for a couple of months, and things didn't work out with the owners and myself and whatnot. So unfortunately, I left that particular studio, but I didn't leave Ed Parker. And I had worked with Joe Palanzo because I asked Mr. Parker, I was like, "What do? We caught up. The people here in New England are still struggling to learn the material at that time." And understand, again, no aspersion upon them. It's just simply stated, it was completely different. The techniques were different. The forms were different. Everything was different. So I had talked to Mr. Parker. He recommended Joe Palanzo. When I went down to Pikesville, Maryland to work with Joe Palanzo for a little bit and get more information. Then there was a big event called the Chicago Conclave, which was run by Lee Wedley. And it was a rare event where you had Ed Parker, Frank Trejo, Joe Palanzo, and Huck Planus, all at the same event.
Very nice. Teaching classes. Very nice. Now, let me just one sec. I want to kind of just backtrack just a little bit before I lose my thought here. But going back before you got in touch with Ed Parker, and you know, kind of when you started, was, I guess, kind of Ed Parker's influence, or I don't know, popularity surrounding Kenpo, was that kind of a thing when you just started training initially
in New England? Absolutely not. No, there were only two people in all of New England that would do even a variation of Mr. Parker's system. No one was doing Ed Parker's American Kenpo or Ed Parker's Kenpo Karate properly. You know, it's funny. Everybody talks about American Kenpo. I knew Mr. Parker for 7 years. I never heard him refer to his art as American Kenpo, ever. That wasn't a term that he used. It was always Ed Parker's Kenpo Karate or Kenpo Karate in general. The term American Kenpo just wasn't used. You know, there are people who say that. I go, well, I took seminars. I took classes. I mean, I got personally smacked around by Ed Parker and demonstrated on. I never heard him call it American Kenpo. There were only two people. There was one guy, Steve Jellin, up in Beverly, Massachusetts, who was a student of Joe Dimmick in Sampai Kenpo. And then there was another gentleman, actually two people, Pedro Bennett in Stoughton. And the more popular one that was more well-known was Chuck Palmer, and he did Tracy Kenpo. But no one was doing Ed Parker's system before 1983. Nobody.
Okay.
So, you know, when Mr. Parker got, we got in on the ground floor with him. And so we got Big Red. We joined the IKKA. We got Big Red, the accumulative journal, at the Chicago Conclave. So he knew we wanted to teach his system. Exactly as he taught it. So I'll never forget, we're in Chicago, and he says, he looks at Leo and myself, says, "Follow me." Deadly serious tone, and I'm like, okay. So we go outside, and it was kind of like the Kenpo version of "Let's make a drug deal." Yeah. So he walks up close to us, and he looks both sides, like he doesn't want anybody else to see. And he reaches into his jacket, and he pulls out a set of the Ed Parker Kenpo Karate franchise booklets or leaflets. He says, "You don't let anybody except your students see these." And it was yellow, orange, purple, blue, green, brown. Those were the booklets. Because back then, Reggie, with the cumulative journal, Big Red, there were no basics in that book. Absolutely none. You had the techniques, you had the sets, you had the forms, you had the terminology, but no basics. The only way you got the basics was being a franchisee.
Oh, okay.
So that's how we utilized that as our foundation. Because that's what we kept saying. We said, "Mr. Parker, what are we going to do? I mean, there's no basics in the." And it's really funny. Here's a really funny side story. So we're getting ready to teach the basics, and we're going through one of the first basics is the inward and outward hand sword. Well, Leo insists on doing it palm up and palm down. I'm going, "No, Leo." I said, "If you look in Volume 3 of Infinite Insights, when they talk about parries, and they've got Frank Trejo's drawings. He's doing the inward and outward parry, and it goes to here. Well, this is an outward hand sword. This is an inward hand sword anchoring the elbow and triangulating." And this is right where we're about to start and open our studio. So I go, "Well, you got to go to the source." I call Ed Parker. Now, Ed Parker, unbeknownst to me, is doing a private lesson at that time with Jeff Speakman. So I'm talking to Mr. Parker. And I believe it was Jeff that he was with. So I said, "Mr. Parker, I have a question for you. How do you do a hand sword?" And I could see Ed Parker in Pasadena, California, looking at his phone like, "Are you freaking serious?" I said, "Mr. Parker, allow me to elaborate. How do you do a hand sword?" And I explained the situation that I'm having with Mr. Lasura. He goes, "Mr. Ribello, you are absolutely right. When you look at the inward and outward parry and the positioning, it's how to anchor your elbow to triangulate your hand for the use of the hand sword. Whether it be inward or outward, it ends in the exact same place. And that was one of those things where I sat there and said, no, I'm on the right path here. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I didn't know is when he got off the phone, he said to, I thought it was Jeff speaking. I'm trying to remember who it was. And he goes, you know, I got to tell you, these guys in New England, they are so adamant of doing everything exactly as I teach it. And it was the truth. We wanted because it was different. So whenever Mr. Parker came to New England, I'd say 90% of the time, if there was a seminar, I was there. I'd get in my little Ford Falcon or my little Dodge Dart and I'd drive mm-hmm. to wherever. And this was long before, you know, any GPS or, you know, MapQuest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wasn't that good back then. Oh, yeah.
So, but I would drive to the seminar. And I would take notes and I would ask him questions. And I wanted to learn the art exactly as the way Mr. Parker learned it. Mm-hmm. And they had a East Coast Instructors Camp in 88. And I attended it and I brought a camera so that way I could record everything and went over all the forms up to and including long three. And thankfully I had Mr. Parker giving me details and was able to record it. Matter of fact, if you look around, you're going to find there's a seminar, Mr. Parker talking about the use of the club.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch that video, and you can find it very fairly easily, you're going to see he keeps looking at somebody. I mean, it's a large seminar, but he keeps looking at one specific person. And the person's head is you see the back of their head with short brown hair, and you keep seeing looking down diagonally and talking to that person and explaining about the use of the club. Later on, he explains about the use of the knife. That's me.
Gotcha.
That's me. He's talking to me. And I was very fortunate and very blessed that Mr. Parker took the time to answer my questions and detail things out to make sure I understood exactly what he meant by what he was doing in the art. I continued to study Kenpo, and in 19, I received my certification for my first degree through the IKK, not testing directly in front of Mr. Parker, but being certified Mr. Parker. And then in 1989, I tested for my second degree in front of Mr. Parker. And I had taken several seminars over the years. I wanted to know. I wanted to make sure I was doing everything correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a huge test. There were 23 black belts on the board that year.
Oh, my.
And I was very fortunate. I also got to test at the time with Christine Bannon Rodriguez, who was also testing for her second degree.
Oh, very nice.
You know,
I didn't realize she was a Kenpo. Like, I didn't realize she was a Kenpo person.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Originally with Okiru Kenpo, which was a Rhode Island-based system of Kenpo. And then, again, Don Rodriguez was one of the main people who got involved with Mr. Parker with the IKK back in the early 80s. And he wanted to show Mr. Parker that they were making an active effort to learn the system. So she demonstrated about a dozen techniques from the Parker system and really wanted to show that they were making the active effort to learn the system as Mr. Parker taught it.
Yeah. So something that I was curious about. So, you know, when I started training, I didn't even realize that there were, you know, different versions of Kenpo. And what I was curious about was as Ed Parker was starting to, you know, get the fame or popularity, was there a time where maybe, you know, the other Kenpo schools were kind of saying, oh, well, like, you know, this is Kenpo, or was it pretty much when Ed Parker kind of came on the scene that everybody kind of wanted to kind of follow his lead, or like, was there maybe a version of Kenpo that was trying to take dominance, I guess, I would well, then, maybe
you
want
know, I've got a book coming out called Kenpo, the Multifaceted Gem. And there are many systems of Kenpo. There's this Chinese influence system to Kenpo. There's Okinawan Kenpo. There's Japanese Kenpo and variations of Nippon or Nihon Kenpo, Shorinji Kenpo. There is Hawaiian-based systems of Kenpo like Kaju Kenpo or Professor Chow's system of Dian Shui Kenpo or other subsystems like CHA3 Kenpo or Kakenbo, other styles. There's Manchurian Kenpo. There's Philippine, there's Polynesian Kenpo. There's, you know, so Kenpo is, there are many different styles and systems of Kenpo. Mr. Parker became one of the more prolific perpetuators of Kenpo in this country. Again, one, because he was on the West Coast and, you know, was even in the inaugural issue of Black Belt magazine back in 1961. Again, he ran one of the first major international or national tournaments with the International Karate Championship. So Mr. Parker was very prolific. He also threw television and movies, whether it be The Lucy Show or The Courtship of Eddie's Father, also movies. Again, Revenge of the Pink Panther, Curse of the Pink Panther. He was also in an I Spy movie called Operation Danger. You know, so Mr. Parker was trying to be very prolific in teaching the Hollywood community, whether it be people like, again, of course, Elvis Presley or Robert Wagner, Natalie Wood, Warren Beatty, George Peppard, Sidney Poitier. Again, Robert Culp. And also to some extent, Bill Cosby when they were running the I Spy series. So also Rick Jason with Dangerous Robin. And so he really was trying to ingratiate himself to the Hollywood community as well. So again, back in 1961, the Black Belted Mormon or, it's funny. They in one magazine they called him the godfather of martial arts, or godfather of karate. So you know, was he the only one? He was a main one that many people knew. But again, Kenpo at that time was also very regional. Like I said, in New England, the main arts that were taught were through George Vasari and Nick Sirio, and later Fred Villari. That lineage, depending on the area, some people would do Okinawan Kenpo like Shikichi Odo, and his lineage. Other people would do Shorinji Kenpo from Doshin So. There were other people that did substyles of Kenpo, like Daniel Pai with the Buckling or White Lotus Kenpo system. So there's many different, it's a very diversified foundation in relationship to what Kenpo is. But obviously, Mr. Parker was one of the, if not the most popular perpetuators of Kenpo in this country.
Okay. Thank you for that. That definitely kind of clears up some of the history for me. So going back to your second degree test, so what was it like testing in front of the
nerve wracking. So what happened was this. So here's an interesting side story. So when I found out I was going to test in front of Mr. Parker, because like I said, simply stated, you didn't get a black belt in the IKK without testing in front of Ed Parker. There are very rare exceptions to that, but mostly if you tested for black belt for any degree, you tested in front of Ed Parker. So I was really worried. I was worried if I had the physical stamina. I was worried if I had the endurance. So I had a mutual friend through the Old United Studios chain. It was also at that time an IKK member, Al Cunningham. He had a little organization that he was in the process of putting together called Knee Kick. Well, anyway, I just wanted to make sure I had the cardiovascular endurance. He had an upcoming test. I said, look, can I take the test? I said, look, I want to clarify. I don't want to test for rank, but I want to make sure I've got the endurance and stamina. So he agreed, and I took the test, and I remember at one point I had to spar 2-on-1, and because of the theories and concepts I had learned from Mr. Parker and the way he dealt with multiple opponents and the multiple opponent techniques, I handled them easily, incredibly easily, shockingly easily to myself. I was like, wow, I thought I was going to have a tough time, and I'm having actually no problem. You know, dealing with these people and redirecting them and putting them against each other. And like, I'm And I'm like, wow. So we get the end test. So gentleman Al Cunningham pulls out a certificate. He says, well, you know, you really kind of need to work on your kicks. And I go, what in the world are you talking about? I don't want to test for rank. I told you that at the beginning. I don't know. Here you go. Here's your certificate back. I don't want it. You know, he wouldn't sign off on it. I don't care. That wasn't what it was about. It was just making sure I had the endurance. Well, sometimes you pay the price for being honest. So I told my instructor at that time that I had done that. And he tried to get me kicked out of the IKK. So I called up Mr. Parker personally, explained the whole situation to him. I said, sir, with all due respect, you're Ed Parker. You're the father of American karate. You're the father of American Kenpo. You know, I've never tested you before. This is the first time I've ever tested. You know, I just wanted to make sure I had the endurance. I didn't take any certificate from the man. I didn't test for any rank. I wasn't. He goes, well, you know, it's one of my, and it was one of the only times in 7 years I ever heard Ed Parker swear. Says, well, you know, Joseph, it's, you know, it's one of my pet piss peeves. And it was like, sir, let me tell you, if you want to bring me all the way back down to white belt, fine. As long as I can keep training with you, it's all that matters. It's all that matters. I just want to learn from you. I want to learn your system. I want to learn your art. Well, you don't have to do that. Well, sir, but I mean, you know, if that's what I have to do to prove to you my loyalty to you and my loyalty to the association and this art, you know, that's what has to be done. I'll do it. You don't have to go that far. So now fast forward to my test. And I'm working with this one gentleman, apparently has a neck problem. He's got a neck injury. So he's really gun shy about working. Now, let me explain also, at that time, there were a lot of people that were testing in front of Ed Parker that weren't doing Ed Parker's Kenpo. They were doing Kara Zenpo or New England-based Kenpo or Nick Serio's Kenpo, whatever, other systems of Kenpo. And Mr. Parker at the point was take everybody in at first and then slowly wean them to learn Ed Parker's Kenpo. Obviously, I was learning Ed Parker's Kenpo, wanted to demonstrate Ed Parker's Kenpo. So I was working with this gentleman, and he was kind of gun-shy, and I just finally got ticked. And I opened up on him. And it was just got to one point, it's like, you know? And so Mr. Parker watched, and, you know, watched me, he got a big smile on his face. Because I moved like somebody who did his system. So we lined up at the end of the test. And he says, everybody did very well today. You know, I'm very impressed with Mr. Ribello. And it's like, wow, he mentioned me by name. That was huge. So he starts to leave, and I go, Mr. Parker! Looks at me, goes, no kick? I've waited my whole life to get the ceremonial kick from Ed Parker. I've waited my whole life to get the kick of pain, the kick of rebirth. Mr. Parker, I want my kick. He looks at me and gets this smile on his face, walks up to me, squares off, forms the triangle with both his hands, boom, kicks me. Well, you know, there were certain black belts there that had never done the kick of pain because they didn't do that system. So now, hey, we can kick people. And it wasn't the first time they'd ever done a test in New England, you know, far from it. But, you know, some people on black belts honestly didn't know they could kick, do the kick. But that meant the world to me that I got my ceremonial kick from Ed Parker.
Yeah, I bet that would be huge. So I could definitely feel the excitement for something like that. So I'm curious with the other schools that, you know, were not doing Ed Parker's Kenpo. Was there like a kind of program to where it's like, okay, well, you know, you're not doing it at Parker's Kenpo, so you know, you start at this level, and or
there was supposed to be, but I tested at the end of 1989. 1 year later, Ed Parker was dead. Last time I saw Mr. Parker was 2 months before he died. At the time, Doreen Cogliandro and Tony had split up, and she was running an event for Mr. Parker. And I remember being there. Matter of fact, there's pictures out on the internet of me in my suit with hair. And with Leo and Steve Arsenault, who was a student of Leo Lassert, who eventually would take over the school in New Bedford. And he's the one who ran it for many years after that point. He was with Joe Palanzo and trained directly with him. He was part of that team at that point. But, yeah, so that was the last time I saw Mr. Parker. And you'll see, if you go look on eBay, you'll see there's a couple of different videos that one particular gentleman is selling. He was never at any of those events, and which he's selling seminars that were originally mine. There's an Ed Parker Nunchaku seminar. If you pick that up, Ed Parker's demonstrating on me. If you look at some of the training camp tapes that are out there, Ed Parker's demonstrating on me. So it wasn't like some isolated incident, and I was like the guy in the third row in the back. No, man, Ed Parker, Mr. Rebello. Because I really wanted to learn. And I didn't know I could get classes from Ed Parker. With the Kenpo politics that were going on, no one was going to tell me that. No one was going to let me know that was even available. So I did the next best thing. Whenever there was a seminar, I went, got right in the front row, and I did that with Mr. Parker. After his passing, I did that with Frank Trejo. I did that with Mike Pick. I did that with Lee Wedlake. I did that with anyone that was a first-generation black belt. I also did that years later with Paul Mills when he was still with the IKKA. Anyone who did the art, I wanted to learn. I'd walk right up front. You know, other people step back because maybe they didn't want to get popped by Mike Pick. I walk right up front. Pop me, baby. I hear you hit like a truck, you know. Pipe me. I want to feel it. To feel is to believe, you know. And that's how I knew. You know, when Ed Parker hit me, man. You know, I remember he did me, we're doing a triggered salute. He hits me with a heel palm and he felt like he compressed my cervical vertebrae. And I was like, Mr. Parker, how do you do a heel palm? Give me that look like, sorry, Mr. Parker, how do you do a heel palm? Because when you did that, I felt all my cervical vertebrae compress as one. Oh, you noticed that, huh? Oh, yes, sir. It was a little tough to miss it. And you talk about torquing at the very end of the motion to compress the torque. And follow to be able to follow through with the strike. Another time we're doing the end of five swords and we're doing that final hand sword to the back of the neck. And he hit me so hard, I thought he was going to knock my contact lenses out of my eyes. And again, Mr. Parker, how do you do that last? How do you do that last hand sword? Again, give me the look. I'm sorry, Mr. Parker. How do you do that hand sword? Because you just knocked about my contact lenses out of my eyes. Again, oh, you noticed that, huh? Oh, yes, sir. And he talked about contouring his wrist so that it would round around the back of the neck. Sometimes we decorate call it the Elvis hand sword. Because when Elvis did a technique, he finished up, he'd let his wrist curl. And he said, don't you ever touch me again. And it was a contour that around the neck, about the back of the neck. And then years later, when I worked with a gentleman, James Moreau, who had studied Hawaiian lua, he mentioned how that was part of the lay hand, how it would contour to make the contour to the wrist. And I did a seminar for a gentleman, Robert Austin, out of Greeley and Fort Collins, Colorado, and his group, the International Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu Association. And I went over Ed Parker's seminar. Mr. Moreau afterwards came up to me and said, you know, Mr. Rebello, at least four instances during that seminar, you went over elements of Hawaiian lua. I said, well, Mr. Parker, you know, studied the art of lua. His family did it. He told the story once of his grandmother, one of his nephews was being kind of rude to his grandmother. She walked up to him and she hit him with a lua shot underneath his armpit. And he got like a seizure. And apparently his hand shaking. And she started cussing him up one side, down the other. How dare I'm your grandmother? Don't you ever do that to me again. And I tell you, you ever do that to me again, I will never forgive you for that. And I'm your grandmother. You respect me. After she was done cussing him out, whoop, hit him with that shot to the armpit again. Boom, he came out of it. He said, I asked my grandmother for years, Mr. Parker would say. I asked her for years to teach her. No, what you're doing's okay. No, what you're doing's all right. No, it's just fine. And she took it to the grave with her. And she never taught him.
That is wild. That I'm going to have to remember this when I interview my my current instructor, but all of that kind of reminds me of he was talking about I can't remember if it was either a seminar or if he was test. I think it was a seminar, but he was doing a seminar with Larry Tatum, and Larry Tatum gave him a very unexpected shot and kind of rang through his body, and so that kind of reminded me of that story. So I'll have to make sure to ask him about that. But,
I went through one with Paul Mills. Paul Mills was here in Massachusetts teaching, doing a seminar. We were talking about, you know, one of the symbols that he used to use, it was lightning. And I had heard that, you know, that he hit very hard. And I've been hit by some of the deadliest people on the planet because I wanted to feel it. From Bill Wallace to Marvin Hagler, straight on down, I've been popped. And so I was talking to Mr. Mills, and so he has a particular action where he does the inward downward diagonal hammer fist to the solar plexus. And when he hit me with that shot, I felt lightning go through my solar plexus and my heart, down to my left kidney, down my left leg, and out my heel. Like I literally had been struck by lightning. So when people talk about that, I know what it's like to get hit by Paul Mills. I know what it's like to get hit by Ed Parker. I know what it's like to get hit by Marvin Hagler. I know what it's like to be, I mean, you know, the feel is to believe, baby. And, you know, all doubt is eradicated out of your mind when you really get popped by somebody. You know, to, like I said, to feel is to believe.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, so I've got a few little questions here as we kind of, head towards the close of our time today. So the first one being, do you have a favorite technique? Or a couple of favorite techniques?
There's never one. Depends on the attack. Of course, we always say the classic ones, five swords, thundering hammer. The more violent, the better. I'm having t-shirts made, Reggie. I hope that you will purchase one when they come out. Kenpo, how to rip, gouge, maim, and mutilate for fun and profit.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna get one.
One of the greatest experiences I ever had dealing with Ed Parker was the more violent the technique, the better. And I do that. He does a particular thing and I go, yeah. You go, you like that stuff, don't you? Huh? Yeah. I remember when he did parting wings and he compounded parting wings and he did the double knife hand. And then he, as he chopped, he'd do an inward finger slice, palm up, reach across the eyes, chop, and grab the armpit and then rip it, tear it, and chop across the throat. And then slide down and nip the tip as he drilled the middle knuckle thrust into the solar plexus. I was like, yeah. Or he'd do five swords and he'd block and he'd chop, he'd compound it with a finger slice or a heel palm dropping down into a claw into the face and then dropping his shoulder and pivoting his foot like a boxer with the uppercut. I watch people just kind of up, just do like an uppercut and barely pivot. And I go, no, man, let me tell you, Ed Parker, Al Tracy, David German, all three of those men, when they came in with that uppercut, they pivot up on the ball of their foot, drop their shoulder down and bury that. You know why we do that heel palm after, immediately after, to move off and step back diagonally? So the guy doesn't throw up on us. And that's why we yank his head down. And then we chop him in the back of the neck. Let him throw up on the ground. If we're lucky, we put him in that. You know? It goes exactly. In that for a while. But, yeah, I mean, I, you know, it's the, you know, what is Kenpo? Kenpo is Chinese Kung Fu combined with Okinawan Karate combined with modern scientific street fighting. You know, we do this stuff, you know, I mean, you know, we're the bad guys, you know, we're the Cobra Kai, you know who the Cobra Kai is compared to Kenpo? A real good start, you know, exactly. It's just the nature of what we do as an art.
Exactly.
But yeah, but there's other systems of Kenpo, like a guy joking with me about two combination from Karazenpo Goshin Jutsu, or four combination and numbered combination. Again, there are other Tracy techniques. Here's another Ed Parker story real quick. So we're at Tony Cogliandro's school in Saugus, Massachusetts, and we're doing a seminar there. And Mr. Park is talking about how in his early days, he would work with different police departments. And they would pick him up in Pasadena, and they would drive him to the edge of the jurisdiction, and another cruiser would be there, and they would drive through that jurisdiction, and he would teach at the different police departments. So one day he's at the police department, and they're going, "Mr. Parker, you know, we're having problems with a particular individual trying to get him into his jail cell. Can you help us out, please?" So anyway, Mr. Rebello. So I walk up to Tony Cogliandro's office, and I brace my two arms against the door jamb and spread my legs apart and brace it. So he says, "I've got this guy, and he's about 6'5", 6'6", big guy. And he's got five officers trying to put him in that jail cell." So I walk up. Now understand, my back's to Mr. Parker. I've got my arms braced up high, my legs are braced spread apart to brace it. I suddenly feel this kicking sensation in the back of my right knee, and I watch these two Hawaiian meat hooks blot out the sun and twist my head like I'm Linda Blair in The Exorcist, and I go spinning into Tony's office. Well, I don't know what he did. Now, since you also studied the Tracy system, years later, I would meet with Al Tracy, and I would get to know Al Tracy, and I would attend the Gathering of Eagles, and I would learn the Tracy system. That way, I could intelligently and articulately talk to a Tracy practitioner. Well, there's two techniques that are related to each other, decoratively called the lock and the key. When I learned the key, it was the technique that Ed Parker had done to me. So here was Ed Parker demonstrating a technique that he originally taught the Tracys and is still taught in the Tracy system of Kenpo, which is no longer taught in Ed Parker's Kenpo. So that's why I learn other systems of Kenpo as well, so I can talk to those individuals intelligently about it. Al Tracy never forgot that. I was there. I interviewed him for my TV show in Wittensville, Massachusetts. I went to the Gathering of Eagles in 1999, and every one since then. There's only one year I missed it, which was 2013. But I went to every other one, learned the Tracy Kenpo system, so that way I could talk to people who were former or present Tracy practitioners. I was made a member of the initial Kenpo Hall of Fame in 2007 through the Tracys. I received a Lifetime Achievement Award from Al Tracy at the last Gathering of Eagles that he was at in Las Vegas. I was brought up with several top-ranking people from the Tracy system at Kenpo and said before the assembled multitude, including Jeff Speakman in Las Vegas, "This is the future of Kenpo." And I'm like, "Huh? What? What am I doing up here?" So I walk up to Pat afterwards. I said, you know, because in 2001, I had done a seminar, I had done interviews for Mr. Tracy with numerous individuals that taught there. So afterwards, I asked this wife, "There's something you might want to tell me." She goes, "Joe, you don't have an agenda. You're not a Parker person that hates the Tracys. You know, so, you know, you're just helping out everyone in all systems of Kenpo." And that meant the world to me.
Excellent. So next question, do you have a favorite form and or set?
In Mr. Parker's system, always short three. I also worked with David German, and David German showed me how to incorporate jujitsu with Kenpo and using short three as the foundation for it. Of course, short four, which I have people say, "That doesn't exist." I went, "Really?" I was in 1988. I had Mr. Parker there going over it. So it exists, and they showed us how to do it. I have video of it. You know, I competed with it. I was the first person in New England who was rated in top 10 in New England doing Ed Parker's forms. I was rated at the Professional Karate League, the PKL, and Crane, Karate Referee Association of New England. And I actually got to test and demonstrate short four in competition in front of Mr. Parker. Tracy system, they have a form called Mass Attack. I like that. I find that interesting form.
Yeah, I like Mass Attack.
You know, that's a unique, you know, it's a unique form. I've also liked the Chinese forms, but, you know, are they truly Kenpo forms? No. But they are interesting forms, which, of course, Tiger and Crane, Book Set, you know, but they're really Kung Fu forms that are put in the Kenpo system.
Yeah, those are my favorites.
Yeah. With David German, it has to be Rams form, another one called Twisted Bow. and then Sidefire. So in New England Kenpo, Hansuki, which was the form that was created by Professor Chow's student, William Chun, here. And we have another one called Six Kata, which is based on the Kata Zenpo Goshijutsu Kata forms. So it's kind of diversified. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, of course, who would you wish that you could train with?
Tino Tulio Sega from Lima Lama. It's one of the systems I've always wanted to learn. I got to meet him.
Very nice, yeah.
Here's a real tragic story. So it's 1999 at the first Gathering of Eagles. And Tino Tulio Sega and some of his students from Mexico are there. And that was one of the main reasons I went. I wanted to see Lima Lama. There was no Lima Lama in New England. You know, I just wanted to see it as a system. Unfortunately, Tino Tulio Sega had a stroke. So he couldn't speak. And he's trying to explain. He was getting really frustrated with they couldn't talk and elaborate on it with me. And I just grabbed him by the arm. I said, "Sir, you don't understand. I'm just glad to meet you. I've always wanted to meet you. I watched Seven. I have that issue of Inside Kung Fu with you going over to Lima Lama Salutation. You don't understand. I'm very glad to finally get to meet you." And he just looked at me and kind of half, because of the stroke and whatnot, kind of half smiled and just nodded. And, it's a system I've always wanted to learn. I have certain individuals who are well-versed in it. I'm very thankful to people like another system from that was Tadashi Yamashita's Sui Kendo, which really should be called Sui Kenpo because it really is, you know, Tadashi Yamashita learning Lima Lama. That's what the system really is, 65 techniques. I was very blessed to work with Richard Norton and watch him demonstrate the complexes from Sui Kendo. Man, if you know Lima Lama or Kenpo and you watch that stuff, you go, that's Oso Kenpo. Yeah.
Very nice. All right. And so our final question, well, I should say, so you get to be the first that I'm going to try this out on. I figured that since Ed Parker was a fan of jokes and such, I figured the last question would be, do you have a joke? And would you like to end us with a joke if you have one?
I have plenty of them. I'm a frustrated stand-up comedian. Let's see. There's several. Ed Parker had some really great ones. I'll do two real quick. These are two of his favorites. There's a young man working at a grocery store, and an old woman walks up to him and says, "Young man, I'd like to buy half a head of lettuce." Wow. Nobody's ever asked that. So he walks up to his boss at the grocery store. He says, "Hey, boss, I got some crazy lady that wants to buy half a head of lettuce." Suddenly he realizes that the woman is right behind him. And he immediately says, "However, this lovely lady would like to buy the other half."
Afterward, I like that.
His boss looks at him and goes, "You know, you're a pretty smart guy, you know?" He goes, "Where are you from, son?" He goes, "I'm from Buffalo, New York, sir, where we have some of the most ugly women in the world. However, we do have some of the most handsome hockey players. Well, I'll have you know that my wife is from Buffalo, New York. Really, what position does she play?"
Very good. All right. Well, yes, I thank you so much for spending some time with me and telling me your story. And what would be a Kenpo podcast without Kenpo Joe? So,
I hope I was of service. So much. I hope I was of service.
Totally. We could definitely chat. For days on end. So I like that.
Okay. But,
Is there anything else that you wanted to throw out there before we close out?
You bet. The Ramp instructional videos, also episodes of my television program, Martial Arts Today TV. It's been on the air for 36 years, over 9 major cable systems, over 1 million households. You can also check out different instructional videos that we're doing. We are now available on Facebook, Instagram, again, now TikTok. And we're adding on more and more. You can find us as Kenpo Joe _ Ribello or just Joe Ribello on Facebook. And we've been featured now on, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Reggie, this makes 18 podcasts I've been on.
All right. Well, excellent.
Thank you for adding to the number. And thank you for doing what you do. I'm very happy and proud of what you do. I'm very glad that you're adding to the depth and breadth of knowledge in Kenpo. And I'm proud to be a part of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you again. And I will be in contact when this is ready to come out. But thank you again.
Thank you. Kenpo rules, baby.